The parsha of Kisavo begins with mitzvos, and the first of those mitzvos is that of Bikurim. And Bikurim, as we know, the first fruits are brought to the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, and the way the Torah describes that is in the first two psukim, bring the first fruits, and you bring them to the Kohen in Pasuk Gimel, it states. Uvasa ala Kohen, Perek Kafav Pasuk Gimel. Uvasa ala Kohen, Asher Yeh Bayamei Mahen. So you'll come to the Kohen, who will be in those days. Va'amarta Elav, and say, and make a declaration. Higadati Hayom Lashem Elokecha, I have stated today to Hashem, your God. Kivasi ala Aretz Asher Nishba Hashem Lavoseinu. That I've come to the land that Hashem swore to our fathers to give to us. This is the first declaration that you make. You will go on to make a larger declaration, the famous Aramia Vedavi that we know so well from Seder night. On a Seder night, we take it to pieces. And Bikurim, you put it all together again and read the book as a continuum. And a phrase that caught the attention of the Rishonim is back in Pasuk Gimel where it says, Uvasa el HaKohen, Asher Yehiyeh Bayamim HaHev, you should come to the Kohen, who will be in those days. And this is certainly a curious thing to say, because you can only bring them to the Kohen who's there in those days. You can't bring them to another Kohen. All the other Kohenim either are not there or not there yet. What then is the meaning of these words, Asher Yeh Bayamei Mahem? The Torah just says, Uvasa la Kohen. I know that it's the Kohen who's there in those days. And Rashi comments. And Rashi says, or the words, Asher Yeh Bayamei Mahem, Ein lecha ela Kohen shebiyamecha kemo shehu. All you have is the Kohen of your days. And the implication of Rashi seems to be that you may be looking for another Kohen from a different time, but he's not there. The only Kohen is the one in your time, and he's the one that you need to deal with. So Rashi, on the one hand, has responded to these words, but his response itself requires investigation. We know that all we have is the Kohen who's there. It almost seems to be a way of rephrasing the question as opposed to answering it. I mean, what is the meaning of these words? It sounds almost as if we are emphasizing that that's the Kohen that you get, and that's that. And the Ramban actually quotes Rashi's words, and he finds them difficult for this very reason, as if to say, why would I think otherwise? How could I think otherwise? I mean, who are you going to bring the Bikurim to, if not the Kohen, in your days? Now, it is true that we do find a very similar phrase in the Pasuk, and comment in your days, only in your days, earlier on in Chumash Devarim, says Ramban, but there it makes perfect sense. We refer, of course, to the beginning of Parsha Shoftim, to the section of Ki Pale Mimcha Davar, if you have questions, you're not sure, you go to the Sanhedrin, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Tes. As it says in Pasuk Cheski, Palei Mimcha Davar LaMishpat, if there's a question that's too difficult for you, beyond you, so go to the Beis HaMikdash. That's where the Sanhedrin is. Pasuk Tes, Uvasa El HaKohanim Halviyim Ve'El HaShofet. Go to the judge, the Sanhedrin, Asher Yehiyeh Bayamim HaHeim. That will be in those days. And once again we have that phrase, and Rashi comments, even though he's not like the judges that used to be, what they call in the parlance, Yeridas Hadoros. So it's not the way, he's not the old school judge, but he's what you have. Every generation, and it's Sanhedrin. All you have is the judge of your days, because otherwise that would lead to basically what you could call nostalgic anarchy. Because you're always pining for the earlier generations, which means that you ignore the Sanhedrin in your day. That's not acceptable. The famous expression of Chazal, Rosh Hashanah, Daf Kaf Hei, Amud Beis, Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmuel Bedoro. That means each generation has its authority. You can't defy the authority of your generation out of allegiance to a previous generation. You feel that you have a certain affinity to that generation. Not so. Says Ramban, I can identify, or I can fully understand the comment with regards to a Sanhedrin, because Sanhedrin is about authority. Authority is a function, presumably, of expertise in Torah. So I can at least understand why a person would think that his father or his grandfather or his uncle, now there was an expert, there was a Torah scholar, but this, I knew him when he was young, and he's not the same thing. In terms of assessing allegiance to authority, there's room to think that perhaps you can understand why the person would say that. Therefore, the Torah needs to emphasize, Ein lecha shofet ela b'yamecha. None of that's appropriate to Cohen. A Cohen's a Cohen. The Cohen grandson is no less a Cohen than the Cohen grandfather. It's not a question of who else are you going to give it to? And it's for this reason, in fact, that the Ramban explains these words, again, of the Pasuk, Asher yeh bayomei mehem, completely different than Rashi. According to Ramban, these words come to tell us something else. Namely, Bikurim, like Truma, actually, go to the Kohen. They can only be eaten by the Kohen. Okay, now you bring them to the Beis HaMikdash. Is there any insistence as to which Kohen you give them to? You see, it could be that a person, he may know a Kohen. Maybe his neighbor is a Kohen. Maybe his son-in-law is a Kohen. And therefore, he may have his own ideas. For example, in Truma, you can choose who you give the Truma to. But when you come to the Beis HaMikdash, can you choose? Says the Torah, you give the Bikurim to the Kohen, Asher Yehiyeh Bayamim Haheim, meaning whichever Kohen is officiating in the Beis HaMikdash, in those days that you get there, he's the one you give it to. You can't withhold it, you can't ask him to pass it on to the other Kohen that you like. And therefore, so that we see how the Ramban explains these words so differently than Rashi. Asher Yehiyeh Haheim, in those days, according to Rashi, means in those days historically, at that point in history, whereas for Ramban, Bayamim Haheim means at that point in the year. Whichever Kohen is the one you meet, that's the one you give Bikurim to. Yes. Now, we should note, and Rashi nonetheless has stated, that it is about generations, and therefore, how do we understand Rashi, that the Torah needs to emphasize that even though you might think this Kohen is not the same as his illustrious ancestors, you still need to bring Burim? Of course you do. There is no other Kohen around. What type of thought is this coming to oust? And there are two very interesting explanations given by the great Meforshe Rashi, what you might have thought. It refers to aspects of giving Bikurim to a Kohen. The Maskele David, Rabbi David Pardo, explains that it comes to relate to one key difference between Bikurim and Truma. As we've noted, Truma goes to the Kohen, Bikurim goes to the Kohen, but there's one difference. Namely, who brings the food to whom? Or who comes to collect it? In other words, although there's a mitzvah to give Truma to the Kohen, and it's severe prohibition against anyone who's not a Kohen eating it, but you don't have to deliver it to a Kohen, you keep it by you, and the Kohen can come and collect it. Not so in Bikurim. It's a key difference between them. When it comes to Bikurim, you do not say, let the Kohen come from the Beis HaMikdash and pick up his Bikurim. You bring the Bikurim to him. It's good service. And really, therefore, that's a gesture. It's a gesture of, in a sense, of great respect to the Kohen. Not only is this yours, I'll bring it to you, and you have to bring it to him. Aha. So the Maskele David says, you see, the Pasuk told us, Uvasa ala Kohen. You come to the Kohen, Asher Yehiyeh Haheim. And that's why the Pasuk needs to emphasize even the Kohen in your day. You might have thought much more of his father and his grandfather, and therefore you can't eat the Truma, but pardon me, the Bikurim, but you might say, listen, doesn't really earn my respect as much as the earlier generations, but him come and get the Bikurim from me. No, to that end, the Torah emphasizes each generation, those are its Kohanim, and every time you bring the Bikurim to the Kohen. That's the Maskele David's approach. You always have to deliver. Similarly, although a slightly different aspect of Bikurim, is from the Perush Divrei David. Divrei David is the Perush of the Taz, the Turei Zav, Rabbi David Halevi, who's famous, of course, for his Perush on the Shulchan Aruch, the Taz. but there's a Perush on Rashi, Divrei David. And he draws our attention to another aspect of the Pasuk, which is actually also very noteworthy. Once again, Pasuk Gimel. Uvasal HaKohen, Asher Yeh Bayamim Ahem. You come to the Kohen who will be in those days, and of course those are the hot words for us, Bayamim Ahem. V'amarta Elav, and say the following. Higadati Hayom Lashem Elokecha, I have stated today, before Hashem, or to Hashem, your God, I've come to the land that he swore to our fathers. It's a very interesting phrase, because you say to the Kohen, and you refer to Hashem as Hashem, your God, Hashem Elokecha, except you're all part of the same religion. Why would you say Hashem Elokecha? You should say, Gadati Ayom, Lashem Elokeinu. It's what he's the God of the Kohen, and not yours. It's everyone's. What are you bringing Bikurim for? So what's behind this phrase, Elokecha? Rather, says the Taz, it is a reverential statement to the Kohen. You refer to Hashem as Elokecha to the Kohen because the Kohen works in the Beis HaMikdash. He serves in the Beis HaMikdash. He's constantly in the presence of the Shekhinah, or frequently in the presence of the Shekhinah. And that makes a difference, as if to say that is responsible for a certain closeness that he has, a certain connection that he has that you don't have, and you need to recognize that. That's part of bringing it to a Kohen. And thus, it has that amazing expression. You say to the Kohen, Hashem Elokecha. In many respects, you're closer to Hashem than I am, because you bring korbanos, and I don't. That's what the non-Kohen says to the Kohen. And says the Divrei David, it appears that it is with this respect, or in this respect, that Rashi feels the Pasuk needs to reassure us, Ein lecha Kohen ela bi'amecha. Because when it comes to a question of madrega, spiritual level, you're saying he's closer to God than you are, well then a person could come and say, well, this is his father, now that's the Kohen, with capital Kaf. He was certainly on a madrega. This is the son, he's just starting, he's 30 days yet, he's closer to Hashem than me. One could again understand that perhaps the person might think, I'm going to bring in the Bikurim, but you're going to make me say Lashem Elokecha to him? Yes. Asher yiyeh bayamim ahim. Ein lecha kohen ela bi'amecha. So we see the Divrei David and the Maskil of David are both explaining that Rashi's approach that the Pasuk emphasizes each generation has its Kohen, not with regards to Bikurim itself, where there's no room to think otherwise, but rather with regards to aspects, again for Maskil of David, that you bring it to him, you don't make him collect it to you. And for the Divrei David, you refer to Hashem as Hashem Elokech. Now, as we mentioned, there are another four or five psukim that we say, the famous Aramiya Vedavi, and I'd like to address one point. It puzzled me for many years, and I believe I have perhaps a suggestion for a resolution. I almost said revolution. I don't think it's that radical, but this declaration, Aramiya Vedavi, Vayered Mitzrayma, I brought the Bikurim, it's known typically as Mikra Bikurim, the declaration of Bikurim. Generally. However, it is also referred to in the Gemara as Vidui Bikurim, the confession of Bikurim. Now, it's the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos and Daf Ayin Beis and elsewhere. It's referred to as Vidui Bikurim. That title seems to be a little bit unusual, because there's no Vidui here. I mean, we're headed today to Vidui, we know what Vidui sounds like. Vidui is when you talk about all the things that are not as one should have done them. Here, the person says, I've come to Eretz Yisrael, I brought my Bikurim, you know, if only every Vidui sounded like that. That's pretty good. So why is it called a Vidui? It sounds like there's a confession of a wrongdoing. And I haven't seen anyone who addresses this question, which means I haven't looked enough. But it does, in a sense, resonate with a sister question. Because in Sheni of this week's parsha, we have another declaration that needs to be made twice every Shemitah cycle, in the third year and the sixth year, that a person has distributed all of his masros correctly, appropriately, bi'arti ha-kodesh min habayis, I've given it to the Levi, I've given everyone exactly what they need. That is in Sheni, which is in Perek Kaf Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Bi'arti HaKadosh Nabayis, V'gam Nesativ LaLevi, L'Ger LeYasim, I've given everyone what they need. So good. And that, as we know, is referred to as Vidui Masros. And once again, here's a person saying he did everything right. Why is that called Vidui? Now we should know that there's a very simple answer to both these questions, and that is that perhaps we have a certain angle on the word Vidui, which is not entirely necessarily so. Vidui comes from the word lahodos, to recognize. We typically use it in the sense of recognizing things that were done wrong. But one could argue, and some do, that it is equally appropriate for things that are done right. It's just we, and therefore, its popular usage has that negative connotation, but it's not necessarily so. One can say vidui for a mitzvah. It sounds a funny thing to say. One can be moda on a mitzvah as much as being moda on an avera. However, the Sforno understands that there is a negative connotation here. And Sforno, when a person says he gave out all of his masros to the Levi, it's all out of the house. That's vidui. Why is it vidui? What went wrong? He's done everything right. Says the Sforno, yes. But if everything was right, he wouldn't have to send his maser outside of the house. It would be in the house. Why? Why did he give it to the Kohen, to the Levi? Because they're the ones who do the Avodah. Why are they the ones who do the Avodah? Because, I mean, they were not the original ones who did the Avodah. Originally it was the Bechor. The Bechorim, as we know, the firstborn of every family. But as a result of the Chet HaEgel, the Avodah shifted from the Bechor to the Kohanim, and by extension to the Leviim. Which means that Sforno, at its root level, had things been exactly as they should, a person would not need to have their master leave the house. They could just send him to their eldest son's room. Because the one, the recipient of Trumas and Masters, would live in the house of every family. You wouldn't need to outsource, so to speak. And therefore, says Forno, it's called Vidui Maser. You did everything right, given the circumstances. But the circumstances are wrong. It's Vidui Maser because it's ultimately Vidui on the Chet HaEgel. So says the Sforno. Now, I would like to apply that idea by referring us to a comment which we've made in the past. It's in the name of the Arizal, with regards to the mitzvah of Bikurim. And that is that the mitzvah of Bikurim comes as a tikkun, as a rectification for the Chet HaMeraglim. How so? Because the Meraglim, they use the fruits of Eretz Yisrael to speak negatively about the land, and therefore it's not clear from the Arizal how much of a factor it is in Bikurim, but it's a significant factor. To that end, therefore, the Torah says, you bring Bikurim, you bring the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, and you speak in praise of Eretz Yisrael. It's a tikkun for the Chet of the Meraglim. And it's for that reason, I don't know if this is so well known, but the mitzvah of Bikurim actually only applies to the Shivas Haminim. It doesn't apply to all fruit. Only to the Shivas Haminim, Shenishtabcha Behem Eretz Yisrael. Because it's really coming in praise of Eretz Yisrael. So says Arizal. It's a fascinating perspective on the mitzvah of Bikurim. And in fact, as we often, it's impossible to mention that without accompanying it with the classic comment of Rabbi Nachum Zemba, Zatzal, Hashem Yikom Domo, killed in the Warsaw Ghetto. For the Mishnah in Bikurim describes how you identify Bikurim. It's the first fruit. How can you remember which is the first one? But rather what happens is, as soon as you see the first fruit budding, you mark it, you wrap something around it. And the Mishnah describes, in Maseches Bikurim, Adam Yered Letoch Sadehu, a person goes down to his field, Ra'a, Te'eino Shebikra, if he sees a fig, for example, that's budding, or Rimon Shebikher, or a pomegranate that's budding, or Anovim Shebikur, or grapes that are budding, Kerech Aleim Gemihi, he wraps something around them, a string or something like that, so that he can remember they were the ones that were first. So Rabbi Nachum Zemba asked an interesting shaila on the Mishnah. The mitzvah of Bikurim applies, as we just stated, to all Shivas Haminim. The Mishnah gave us three examples of the seven. Why would the Mishnah choose those three for special mention, as opposed to just one or all seven? Says Rabbi Nachum Zemba, which ones did it choose? Te'eino Shebichra, fig, Rimo Shebichra, pomegranate, Novim Shebichra, grapes. Those three have a special history. They were the three fruits that the Meraglim brought back with them. They took Eshkol Anavim, Umin HaRimonim, Umin HaTe'enim. And therefore, because they specifically, out of the seven, were the three that were the vehicle for the Lashon Hara that they spread, thus they get an honorary mention in the Mishnah. If you're going to think of any examples of Bikurim, let it be those three. So says Rabbi Nachman Zev. And therefore, I wonder if perhaps we can explain the reason why the declaration of Bikurim is called Vidui Bikurim in a way which is similar to the explanation of the Sforno. As if to say, what the Sforno said for the Chet HaEgel about Vidui Maaser, we may say for the Chet HaMeraglim for Vidui Bikurim. Namely, the person is saying, I'm bringing Bikurim here to give praise to Eretz Yisrael, which is a wonderful thing, but there's background. Why did I have to do that? What's the inception of this mitzvah were the negative things that were said, and therefore that's why it's called the vidui for what brings this declaration about. That I suggest as perhaps an explanation for what for vidui bikurim alongside vidui mas. Now, I'd like to actually see together how there's an aspect of the mitzvah of Bikurim which actually leaves the field, so to speak, of the mitzvah of Bikurim and is influential halacha lemaisa for all time. The Gemara, in a couple of places, discusses the status of a ger, of a convert, bringing Bikurim, are there any issues there, specifically about making the declaration, the accompanying declaration. And the Gemara actually says, in Maseches Makos Yotes, in Bava Basra, Daf Pei Aleph, Ger Mevi, he brings Bikurim, Ve'eno Kore, but he doesn't make the declaration, he just gives it to the Kohen, wishes him a nice day, and doesn't make the Arami of Edavi or any of that. And the reason why, says the Gemara, is because, once again, back to Pasuk Gimel, what does he say? Uvasala kohen, asheya ibema mahem, va'amartar lav, and you say, higadati hayom nashem alokecha, I declare today, ki vasi ala aretz, asher nishbar shem lavoseinu, laseis lanu, that Hashem swore to our fathers to give to us. Says the Mishnah in Maseches Bikurim, he can't say Lavoseinu. He's Jewish, but they're not Avoseinu. So he brings the Bikurim, but he doesn't say anything. And that's the Mishnah. And if you only ever learned the Mishnayos, that's all you'd know. And it's clear and there is no dissenting opinion. It's very interesting to know that the Rambam rules, I mean, I'll state it, and then we need to explain it, he rules not like the Mishnah. Rambam says, in Hilchos Bikurim, Perek Dalet Halacha Gimel, Hager Mevi V'Kore. He brings Bikurim, and with the accompanying declaration. Why? Shene'emar la'Avraham, because it's said with regards to Avram, Av Hamon Goyim Nesaticha, he's the father of all nations. Harehu Av Kol Haolam Kulo, he's the father of the world. Shenichnasin Tachas Kanfe Hashchina. For those who join. In other words, he's the father of all of those who follow his way. His children, certainly, and anyone who joins, he's their father. And therefore, says Rambam, Avram is Avoseinu, the others will see. Except the problem is, the Rambam, he says it, but he's got to have a source. I mean, the Mishnah says otherwise. The Mishnah says the Ger can't say Avoseinu. The Rambam says he can. What is the basis of the Rambam? Well, the Mefarshim get busy, and the answer seems quite straightforward if you know where to look. And that is, there is a Yerushalmi in Bikurim there. And the Yerushalmi tells us that there is a machlokus in this regard. The opinion that he cannot make this declaration is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says that he can, and the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Yerushalmi has settled the whole thing, and the Rambam paskens like the Yerushalmi. This is basically the consensus of the Mefarshim of the Rambam. In a sense, the The Mishnah is not to be taken as the halacha because the Yerushalmi has placed it in context of a dispute, and the halacha follows the disputing opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So say the Mepharshim, they don't know. When I say they don't know, it means that the Rambam didn't say in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam never says in the Mishnah Torah what his sources are. That's why we need the Gedolei Hadoros to work it out. Interestingly, the son of the Rambam, who himself was a towering, of course, Gadol, Rabbeinu Avram ben Rambam, he had in mind as a work to write a sefer demonstrating the sources for all of his father's ruling. That's a sefer that would have saved us a great deal of discussion, which sadly, for some reason, he wasn't able to write. But on this occasion, of course, we rely on the Mepharshim of Rambam, but on this occasion, the Mepharshim of the Rambam were endorsed by the words of the Rambam himself, because in this matter, we have the Rambam's own explanation given, not in the Mishnah Torah, but in a responsa that he wrote to a ger on this very question. And the Rambam wrote his tshuva. There was a ger in Bavel, Iraq, called Ovadia, which is, as you know, an interesting name for a ger. The original Ovadia was a ger. And this ger, Ovadia, sent a letter to the Rambam saying, I'm a ger. Please direct me and guide me in terms of davening. Can I say everything that everybody else says? So he mamish asked the shayla in terms of his Shemona Esrei. You start by saying Elokeinu, Elokei Avoseinu. Can I say that? And I'll just quote a few selective lines from the Rambam to see how he addresses this ger. Higiu elai she'elos marana v'rabana Ovadia. I received the question from our master, Ovadia, gives him great respect, Hamaskil, Hamevin, Ger Tzedek. Yishalem Hashem pa'alo, utihi maskato shlema me'im Hashem elokei Yisrael, asher ba lachsos tachas kanfav. Which are words, if we get the context, those are the words that Boaz originally said to Rus, the Giyores. Yishalem Hashem pa'alo, scharech, utihi maskato shlema. So now, you ask me the question, can you say Elokeinu Elokei Avoseinu? Says Rambam, Yesh lecha lomar hakol ketiknam. Everything that's in the Siddur, that everyone says, you say. Va'al tishane davar, do not change anything. Ela, kemo sheyitpalel v'yivarech kol ezrach miYisrael, as surely as any natural born Yisrael would daven and bless, ken ro'i lecha levarechu litpalel. The Ikra Dover, and why is it so? Avraham Avinu, who shelimit kol ha'am, because Avraham Avinu is the one that began to teach everyone about Hashem. V'hiskilam v'odiyam dasa emes, he told them the correct path. V'yichudu shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the oneness of Hashem. Lefichach, kol mi sheitgayer, anyone who converts to Torah, to Judaism, atzov kol adoros, in all generations, the kolam yachet shemo shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu kumo shukosef baTorah mitalmidav shel Avraham Avinu alav shalom. He is a student. He's a disciple, a follower of Avram. Ubnei beiso him kulam. He's part of Avram's household. Avram is his father. Keshem shechazir anshe dorah befiv uvelimudo. In the same way that when Avram was alive, he influenced people directly by talking to them. Hechzir kol asidim nitkayer betzava also. Through his legacy, he has influenced all generations, people to come. And therefore, he is yet considered to be their teacher and their father. Now, says Rambam, so far it's just the Rambam talking. And then at the end of the tshuva, the Rambam says, and let me tell you why I say this, where I get it from. The kol ma she'amarnu lecha b'inyan ha-brochas shelo tishaneh, everything I've told you, do not change anything in the brochas. They say Avoseinu, you say Avoseinu, kfar ra'ya lazeh mimaseches bikurim. My source is Maseches Bikurim. How so? He quotes the Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi says, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, Ger meviva kore, my time, why? Ki av hamon goyim nesaticha. Because he's the father of all nations. Hine nitbarer lecha, it's clear to you, says Rambam, Sheyesh lecha lomar asher nishba Hashem l'avoseinu. He can say that Hashem swore to our fathers. He's referring to Avram. V'hu adin l'shar brachos v'atfilos shelo tishaneh klum. So it's a fascinating, wonderful, really, firstly, to see how the Rambam writes to this Ger, but also to see, in a sense, the unity of Torah. I mean, we have Hilchos Tefillah, we have Hilchos Bikurim, and in our estimation, never the twain shall meet. And yet the unifying themes, and to have all of that available for the Rambam to Paskin based on the Yerushalmi in Bikurim, Halacha Lamaiser, for Hilchos Shemona Esrei, for this Ger. Now, what's very interesting to note, and we must add, is that we can't ignore the fact that the Ger says, Asher Nishba Hashem L'Avoseinu, in the plural, to our fathers. Now, we focus on Avram. And Avram, he's the first of the Gerim, and he's everyone's father. So you can say Avram Avinu. But what about Yitzchak and Yaakov? And this is dealt with by the Ramban in his commentary to Maseches Bava Basra. And clearly, says Ramban, it's an interesting way of looking at it, because I think we might be inclined to say that who's with the Gerim? Who is the father of the Gerim? Avram, he himself was a Ger of sorts, and therefore anyone who's like him. But Yitzchak and Yaakov, they were already born Jewish, so to speak. And therefore they weren't Gerim. But really, says Ramban, what the Yerushalmi is saying is that all of them, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, are all called the fathers, because together they showed the way for all people, and therefore any Ger is considered to be a son of all of them. If that weren't true, you couldn't say Avoseinu in the plural, you could only talk about Avram. But Yitzchak and Yaakov equally are considered to be patriarchs of all those who join Judaism. And this leads us just to one final point to close the circle. Because the Rambam has spoken loud and clear, we feel that everything is resolved. But then, something interesting happens. As we mentioned before, in the end, in Sheni, there's another declaration, the second declaration, called Vidui Maaser. And lo and behold, the Rambam, in the Mishneh Torah, with regards to Vidui Maaser, says that a convert, when he gets rid of all of his masros in the third year, he doesn't make this declaration. Why not? Because if we take a look at the declaration that we make, or at least one pasuk, have a look in pasuk tes vav. Pasuk yud gimel and yud dalet of perek kafav is the person saying what he's done. He's done everything beseder. Then pasuk tes vav hashkifa. Look upon us from your abode in heaven, Uvareches Amcha Yisrael, the Eitha Adama Shenasata Lanu, and the land you've given us. Kashen Ishbat Lavoseinu, Eretz Avas Lavodvash. Like you promised to our fathers. Says Rambam, a Ger can't say that because Kashen Ishbat Lavoseinu, he can't say that. They're not his fathers. So this is very striking. Because the Rambam is the one who emphasized, and indeed who paskened, with regards to Mikra Bikurim, you say, Asher Nishba Asher L'Avoseinu, says Rambam, Ger can say that, Avram, and by extension Yitzchak and Yaakov, they're his fathers. And the very same Rambam, when it comes to the second declaration, says, well, it says L'Avoseinu, you can't say that, so best to leave it out. What is the difference between Avoseinu, the first time round that he can say, and Avoseinu the second time? This is a question that has perplexed many commentators throughout the ages. And I've came across a wonderful explanation of the difference between them in the writings of the Aruch Laner, the Rabbi Jacob Ettlinger in Germany in the 1800s. He was one of the Rebbes of Rav Hirsch, Rabbi Jacob Ettlinger, the Rav of Altena. And in his Perush Aruch Laner in Maseches Makkos, he explains as follows, a wonderful explanation. As we've seen, the convert can refer, the Ger can refer to Avram as his father, because Avram showed the way for all converts. Not only Avram, but also Yitzhak and also Yaakov. Quite so. But it stops there. In other words, Avram, Yitzhak and Yaakov are his fathers, but then in a sense there's almost like a generation gap. Because subsequent generations, I mean, they weren't showing the way. I mean, they were on the way, but they weren't showing the way. You can't say about all the intermittent generations that they were all his fathers. And they don't need to be. He almost has a belaz, what they would call a hyperlink, to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And he bypasses everybody else, which is okay. Therefore, if you want to know, says Aruch Laner, can a ger use the word avoseinu? The question will be, well, it depends who he's referring to. If he's referring to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, he can say it. But if he's referring to the generations, the ancestors of the Jewish people, after Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they're not his fathers. And now let us look at the two avoseinus of Bikurim and of Maaser. In Bikurim, if we see the Pasuk again, he says in Perek Kavvav, Pasuk Gimel, in the middle of the Pasuk, V'amartar Elav, Higadati Ayom L'Shem Elokecha, Kivasya La'aretz HaShenishba Hashem L'Avoseinu L'Aseis L'Anu. I've come to the land that Hashem swore to our fathers. What land is that? Eretz Yisrael? Who is Avoseinu? Did Hashem swear to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Eretz Canaan? Yes! So who is Avoseinu? Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Are they the fathers of the ger? Yes! So it's perfectly okay to say it? That's Bikurim. And therefore the Rambam says the ger will say Avoseinu. However, says Aruch Laner, go back now to Pasuk Tesvav and read every word carefully. It begins Hashkifa, Mimon Kodshecha, Min HaShamayim, Uvarecha Zamcha, Es Yisrael, Ve'esadom HaShem HaSatolanu, Kasher Nishbat El Avoseinu, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash. That you swore, bless the land that you swore to our fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. Now that's a well-known expression to us. Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash. I mean, it's a lot has happened based on those words. Except it's very interesting to ask a simple question. Who was told that Eretz, to whom was Eretz described as Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash? As if to say, when was the first time in the Torah that we see this expression used? It's interesting to note, throughout the entirety of Chumash Bereishis, Eretz Canaan is mentioned numerous times, and it is never called Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash. Not that it wasn't, but it's not referred to as that. The first reference we have to Eretz Yisrael as Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash is in Parshas Shemos, when Moshe is told by the burning bush, he's told to go and tell Bnei Yisrael, I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim, I'm going to bring you to Eretz Canaan, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash. And therefore, when you refer to Eretz Yisrael as Zavas Chalav Udavash, and you say that you swore that land to our fathers, so you're referring to those that were at whom it was presented as Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash, that's the ancestors of the Jewish people that were in Mitzrayim. Well, they're the ancestors of the Jewish people, but they're not the ancestors of the ger. And that is why the Rambam says, Avoseinu, the reason why a ger can read by Bikurim and not by Maaser is because the word Avoseinu does not refer to the same group of people in those two contexts. In Bikurim, it's Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they're his fathers. In Maaser, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash, that's the generation that left Mitzrayim, and he didn't leave Mitzrayim, and therefore that's not called Avoseinu. There's plenty more to say on this topic, but I mention it for the blend. We see how the parshanut goes together with the halacha and from all different locations within Torah. Now, most of the parsha really is a good almost 70 psukim is what's called the tochacha. It's the second tochacha of the Torah. The first tochacha is in the end of Chumash by Yikra, Parshas Bechukosai, and this is the second. Mishnah Torah, in many respects, reiterates things that have been mentioned earlier on, and the Tochacha as well. And Mefarshim discuss at length, in a sense, to compare the two, because they don't say exactly the same thing, there's significant differences between them, and therefore, how would we quantify the differences between these two Tochachos? And we should know, and I believe probably the most well-known answer to this question is that the difference between the first Tochacha and the second Tochacha is that they refer to the destructions of the first and second Beis HaMikdash respectively. Which means that the first one in Chumash Vayikra is about the first Golos, the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, and the one in our parish is about the second Golos of the second Beis HaMikdash. That is the opinion of the Ramban. Many follow him, and he writes at length to demonstrate how the elements within the first Tochacha apply and accrue more to the issues of the first Churban and of the second Tochacha to the second Churban. And however, we should know that the position of Ramban is strongly contested by the Abarbanel. Abarbanel, he brings the Ramban, he quotes the Ramban, but he takes a significant issue with the Ramban. And indeed, according to the approach of the Abarbanel, the division between the first and the second Tohacha is not that the first is the first and the second is the second, but both are both. In other words, both Tohachas refer ultimately to both Chorbanim, each one in their own way, but it's not divided in terms of, or segmented in that way, of each Tohacha is dealing in its entirety with a different Chorban. And he sets about stating his case, explaining why he says this. Firstly, says Abarbanel, I will show you that the first Tohacha refers to both. Then we'll get to the second one, to Aaron. But the one in Parshas B'chukosai refers to both. Firstly, on the simplest level, when the Pasuk talks about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which it does, the words in Parshas B'chukosai are V'hashimosi es mikdash sheichem. In the plural, translates, I will lay desolate your sanctuaries, your mikdashim, mikdash sheichem. Says Abarbanel, the Pasuk is clearly referring to more than one Mikdash. It's covering both. Mikdash Sheichem, Mikdash Rishon, Mikdash Sheini. Pashut. Interestingly, I mean, here is the point to note, that there is a comment of Chazal on the words Vashimosimis Mikdash Sheichem, and that is with regards to the status of a Shul, Kedusha of the Beis Knesses, where Rabbi Yehuda states that a shul has kedusha, and from a certain point of view, even when it's no longer a shul, the premises still have kedusha. And where does that come from? He quotes the pasuk "Vashimosiyas mikdash sheichem," which tells you that even after Vashimosi, even after they're no longer built, they're still called mikdash sheichem. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda has adduced the pasuk of "Vashimosiyas mikdash sheichem" for a base knesses. And many Mefarshim explain the reason why he does that. I mean, in principle, isn't it about the Beis HaMikdash? How can you then extend it to a Beis HaKnesses? You can say a Beis HaKnesses is a Mikdash Ma'at. But it's more than that. It's because of the plural. Vashimasvias Mikdash Sheichem means in addition to the Beis HaMikdash, other Mikdashim. It's in the Pasuk itself tells us it's talking about more Beis HaMikdash. But that means that's the Gemara's, Rabbi Yehuda's way of responding to the plural. The plural doesn't refer to two bate mikdash, but rather the Beis HaMikdash and other types of mikdashim. But the Abarbanel takes, in a sense, a more linear route. Mikdash Sheichem is about the Beis HaMikdash. If it's said in the plural, it's about both. And you already begin to see that the first Tohacha is not restricted to the first Beis HaMikdash. It's about both. Moreover, says Abarbanel, let us go to the Gemara, because one of the psukim at the end of the first Tohacha, it's a pasuk that we say often in Slichos, which Mitzvah will say very soon, towards the end of the Tohacha there, Ve'af Gamzos, Ve'osam Be'eret Oveihem, even where they're there, Lo Ma'astim, Ve'lo Ga'altim, Lechalosam, Ve'afebrisi Itam. I mean, that's a very intensive pasuk in terms of all of those phrases. And the Gemara in Maseches Megillah, Daf Yud Aleph, apportions the words and phrases of that pasuk to different stages in history. And some of them feed into the second Beis HaMikdash. Lo Ma'astim or Lo Ga'altim is a reference to Golus Yavan, says the Gemara in Megillah. Now Golus Yavan took place during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, not the first. And yet the Gemara adduces the pasuk in the first Tohacha for a time in the second Commonwealth, the second Beis HaMikdash. Says the Abarbanel, that's further support for what I'm saying from the Gemara itself, that even the first Tohacha is about both. And moreover, his final comment on that first Tohacha is that the Pasuk concludes that I will bring them back, and Liyos Lahem Lelokim, to be a God for them. Liyos Lahem Lelokim. And says the Abarbanel, that phrase, the Oslahem Elokim, refers to the restoration and the returning of the Shekhinah, the divine presence amongst the Jewish people, fully. That's called Liyoslahem Elokim. And that's how the first Tohacha ends. But that's not how the first Golos ended. In other words, the first Golas bubble, those 70 years, when we came back, first of all, the entire Jewish people did not come back. And it's a fraction of them. And secondly, the Gemara itself says in Maseches Yoma, the end of the first perek, makes the statement that the Shechina was not present in the second Beis HaMikdash. Now clearly, that has to be taken in context. Everything is relative. You can't say the Shechina was not present in the second Beis HaMikdash, but we say that the Shechina is present in every minyan, or in every shul, because the shul is not on a higher level than the Beis HaMikdash. Clearly there was the Shechina there, but the Gemara says the Shechina was missing because in its full emanation, in its full expression, the Shechina was not there. Not like the first time. Well, if the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Shechina, but the first Tochacha ends by saying, when that will end, that didn't happen as the first Golos came to an end. It hasn't happened yet. We're still waiting for it to happen, which means that the realization will be at the end of the second Golos. And that is why I say, says Abarbanel, that the first Tochacha really covers both. And so does the second. And now let's move to the Tochacha in our Parsha. So it's a very heavy debate now between Ramban, Abarbanel takes him on. If we look, for example, at Pasuk, and he really, from many different angles, as we'll see. Have a look at Pasuk Kafhei. So we're in the Tochacha, which is already, Perek Kafches is really the Perek of the Tochacha, and Pasuk Kafhei. Yitencha Hashem nigaf lefnei avecha. Hashem will see you smitten before your enemies. Bederech echad teitzeila, you'll go out to meet him in one way. V'shiva derachim tanus lefanav, and you'll retreat in seven different directions. Really, what it means, what the pasuk is saying, is that your any kind of military encounter will be completely ineffectual. Says the Abarbanel, here we are in the second Tochacha. According to the Ramban, it refers to the second time of the second Beis HaMikdash. But the truth is, we know that actually in many, many instances, the Jewish people were quite effective in fending off or in even countering the Roman offensive. In the first Beis HaMikdash, not at all. And therefore, says Abarbanel, this pasuk, which talks about the Jewish people completely failing in any type of military encounter, this seems to me to refer to the first Beis HaMikdash, not the second Beis HaMikdash. Rather, says Abarbanel, this Tochacha also is divided into two. The first half of this Tochacha refers to the first Chorban, the second half to the second Chorban. Where is the dividing point? That we will have to see. The dividing point between them, says Abarbanel, and again, it reminds us to be sensitive to the Parshanut here. I mean, the Tochacha is so long in Parshas Kisava. I mean, it's dozens of psukim, and it's read so quickly, so you don't know where you are. And to start noting different sections within the Tochacha, I mean, they won't let you be the Balkuri, that's for sure. But have a look at Pasuk Memhei of the Tochacha, roughly halfway through. Pasuk Memhei of Perek Avches states, Uva'u alecha kol, it's mentioned many, many things. Uva'u alecha kol aklalo se'ele, urdafucha v'sigucha, it's terrible to read, but all these curses will come, they'll pursue you, they'll catch you up, adishamdach, until you be destroyed. Kilo shamata b'kol Hashem lecha, because you didn't heed Hashem's voice, lishmor mitzvosav v'chukosav asher tzivach, to keep his mitzvos. Now, what's significant about this pasuk? This pasuk seemingly is almost like a pasuk of summation in a sense. I mean, the Tochacha hasn't finished, but it's already like, and all of this will happen because what we have. Why are you talking about all of this when we're halfway through this? Rather, says Abarbanel, this is an interim summation because actually the description of one segment has finished, and that's why you should note the resonance between the phrases in this pasuk Memhei. They essentially are concluding the way the Tochacha began, which was in Pasuk Tesvav. If we take a look at Pasuk Tesvav, Vahaya, Im Lotishma Bekol Hashem Elokecha, Lishmol Asos Is Komets Vosav Vosav, Shenech Vosav Hayom, Uva'u alecha kala klolos ha'ele v'hisigucha. That's how it opened. All of these klolos will come v'hisigucha. And that's then reiterated, repeated, or it's a refrain, because it's closing that, it's not closing the tokucha, but it's closing that segment of the tokucha. That is why I say, says Abar Benel, that pasuk mem hei is a dividing point between the psukim that refer to the first korban as opposed to the second korban. And thus, if we take a look at those earlier psukim, so we'll see they relate to first Beis Hamikdash issues. One of the primary points of the Ramban is that Shmita is not mentioned at all in the second Tochacha in R1, and it is mentioned a lot in the first one, Az Tirtzeh Arz Shabsoseha, and that he mentions for his approach. Says Abar Benel, yes, however, we do note that in those earlier psukim, there's no, shall we say, overt mention of Shmita. However, says Abar Benel, you should also note that the number 7, which is of course the number of Shmita, features prominently. And that, in a sense, is a reference to the Shmita issue, which was stated at length in the first one. It's reiterated here with regards to the first Beis Hamikdash. If we take in Pasuk, Kaf Beis, which states, it's a list, Yakha Hashem, Vashachefes, Vatavka Kadachas, Vatalekas, Vachur, Vacher, Vashidafon, Uveyerakon, those are 7 things. Right, that grouping of 7 in that earlier part of the Tochacha, it's Midah Keneged Midah over the Shmita issue. And of course, the Pasuk that we mentioned before, Pasuk Kafhei, Bederech Echad, Teitzei Elav, Uveshiva Derochim Tanus Lefanav, which again is for the first Beis Hamikdash. All of these, when calamity comes in increments or groups of 7, it's because the 7 motif is there as a result of the Shmita. Also, we should note, says Abar Benel, the Jewish people going into Golus is mentioned twice in this Tochacha. Twice, because they went to Golus twice. But let's see how the two Goliyos are mentioned. Once in the first half, once in the second. In the first half, which is in Pasuk Lamed Vav, now if it's Lamed Vav and it's the first half, it's a reference to the first Golus, that's Golus Nebuchadnezzar, to Babel. And how is that described? So we're looking at Pasuk Lamed Vav. Yolech Hashem eschav es malkecha asher takim alecha. Hashem will bring you and your king el goy asher leyadata tavavasecha, to a nation that you don't know. In other words, a nation that you're not, you know, you don't have experience with. But that's all that it's described as. In contrast, and that's Bavel. In other words, right, we didn't know Bavel. But look at Pasuk Memtes, which in our discussion now is the second Beis Hamikdash, and it doesn't just talk about a nation that you don't know, but rather states again, and the very fact that the Golus is mentioned again tells us that it's the second Golus. You saw Hashem Alecha Goy Merachok, a goy from far away. Not just that you don't know, he's from nowhere near. Miktei Aretz, in terms of the world as it was populated at that time, Kashay de Hanasha, as the eagle swoops, which is, we now look back at the Roman eagle. Goy asher lo tishma l'shono, a goy whose language you don't speak, you don't understand. In other words, here we see that there are many more identifying factors of the exiling nation which aren't appropriate the first time around, because in Bavel, it wasn't Meirachok, not in that way, not Mekzei Haaretz, it's not from the edge of civilization. And it's also not true to say a nation whose language you don't know, because they did know Aramaic. Right, Lotishma Lishono. And therefore, it's much more modified the first time around. Whereas here, the second time, Mikzei Ha'aret, because that was true for the second time, Gershe Lotishma Lishono, etc. And it is only in the second Golus, so in the second half, in Pasuk Samach Dalad, where it says, Vehefitzcha Hashem Bechol Ha'amim, Mikzei Ha'aret, Bad Ketzei Ha'aretz, Hashem will spread you out in all nations, from one end of the earth to the other. And that didn't really happen in the first Churban, in the first Golus. They were essentially localized in Bavel, a bit to the left, a bit to the right. But, of course, in the second Golus, which we are really still in, I mean, there's no place that the Jewish people haven't been. That's the second half, that's the second type of Golus. And a fascinating final comment. In Pasuk Samach, which is again the second half, Ve'hishiv b'cha es kol madvei Mitzrayim, all the malaise of Egypt, asher gortam ipneim, that you were fearful of them, v'davku b'cha, will all accrue to you, will all apply to you. Everything bad that happened to Mitzrayim will happen to you. Now what's interesting is, we look at that pasuk and we think, well, what could that possibly mean? Presumably, what's Madvei Mitzrayim, the malaise of Mitzrayim, are the makos. I mean, those are the terrible situations of Mitzrayim. It sounds like the pasuk is predicting, what, Eser makos for the Jewish people. But actually, says the Abarbanel, the primary Madvei Mitzrayim, the primary the tragedy of Mitzrayim, was their stubborn refusal to come to terms with the situation. Kashyus Halev, the hardening of Paro's heart and that of his servants. That actually was the root of the problem. If that wasn't there, then none of the makas would have happened. And Abarbanel says, in a fascinating way, Madvei Mitzrayim, which will apply to the Jewish people, is the Jewish people will not be able to come to terms with their situation. They will stubbornly persist, and it will become their undoing, like Mitzrayim, says Abarbanel. As we know, there were many who were not prepared to submit at all to Rome in any kind of peaceful way. They forced the Jewish people to fight. They burnt all their food. That's known as the Bir Yonim, and in a sense, they led the Jewish people to a confrontation that they could not possibly be victorious in, and essentially precipitated the downfall. They were afflicted by Madvei Mitzrayim. What a thing to say. The Rabbanel says in the second half, the second Beis HaMikdash, a military encounter is not always the solution. It doesn't mean it's never the solution, but at that time, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, it's not going to work, v'hi lo titzlach, it's not going to work, and they weren't hearing, and they forced everyone into a corner, and the city was overrun. So this is fascinating, and of course there are many other details, as you imagine, it's the Abarbanel. But to consider such a major discussion, Ramban goes through so thoroughly each of the Tochachas and the Abarbanel, approaching from a different angle, takes the whole thing on and goes to the very same psukim, and in the process giving us great insight into both. Of course, the goal of the Tochacha is that it should be behind us, but it's only behind us if we heed the message. The Baal Kohrei shouldn't read so fast that no one hears, because that's not a guarantee that it won't happen. It's got to be taken to heart, and Mitzvah Hashem should lead us only to good things, and we should know from these things, and we should only have Besuras Tovas, Hashuas V'Nechamas.